ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Do you lean into your generational identity? Whether it's baby boomer, generation X, Y, Z, or alpha, the existence of these categories can really affect the way we interact with each other. But what if you could use these differences to create something positive? Hello, I'm Lisa Leong, and this is ABC Radio National's This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. Multi-generational teams are a fact of modern workplaces, and in this episode, we're going to learn how to set the stage to help them thrive. Megan Gerhardt is a professor of the Pharma School of Business, Miami University, and the co-author of Gentelligence, the revolutionary approach to leading an intergenerational workforce. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's introduce this concept of multi-generational work. When we say we have five generations in the workplace right now, who are we talking about?
At this moment, we are talking about everyone from Silent Generation. So that tends to be people born 1928 to 1945. Then we have, of course, the very prominent baby boomer generation. So usually classified as anyone born 1946 to 1964. We have my generation, Gen X. So 1965 to about 1980, give or take. Of course, our millennial generation, 1981 to, now this one varies quite a bit depending on where you are, but here in the US, we say 1996. It sometimes goes all the way to 2000, depending on where you're at. And then, of course, our youngest generation in the workforce right now, Gen Z, sometimes called Gen Z, 1997 to we're going to say, roughly 2012, but again, there's a little bit of debate right now on that. So that is the most common characteristic of the five generations in the workplace at this very moment.
And Megan, why is this area becoming more of a focus for researchers and practitioners?
I think it's because people do genuinely experience differences that are a product of the time and history in which you grow up. I think the time in which you grow up and have your most formative years, so roughly we'll say 5 to 25 years old, we do know, research supports, that the things that happen around you, really important cultural, social, economic, political events, they affect all of us regardless of age. But if you take something like the pandemic, what we see is that it disproportionately affects people during those formative years in ways that maybe when we're older, we don't have that same impact. So we're seeing signs now that Gen Z, for example, has really been impacted by COVID, by their thoughts on things like the importance of mental health in the workplace and otherwise, their risk appetite. So I really, in my work, talk a lot about generational norms. And the way I've defined that is you can look at frequencies of behaviors and attitudes and how they ebb and flow over time. And we can say that, for example, people in my generation felt a certain way about work at a higher frequency than people in my parents' or my kids' generation. For example, we're seeing Gen Zs at a higher frequency than older generations asking for more consideration and support around mental health in the workplace, whether that's wanting wellness benefits or self-care days or taking more of that paid time off. Across industries, we're seeing that. That is a different norm. We're seeing a more frequent behavior of that in Gen Z than we saw with millennials. And certainly it goes, drastically down if you go back several generations. It would be largely unheard of that a baby boomer at the beginning of their career would have asked for a self-care day. You know, I have managers who say, I don't even understand those words in that order. That's not a work issue, that's a personal issue. And so when you think about frequencies, you can say, well, I'm not saying everyone who's a Gen Z would do that or thinks that's appropriate or doesn't. I'm saying it's happening more often than it did for a prior generation, and that's interesting. So I think we are interested and fascinated by those differences, but I also think we are very judgmental about those differences.
So a point of order here then, what is the difference between what you're talking about and the danger of stereotyping and cliches?
Excellent question. So when we stereotype, we are using, you know, some sort of categorization, in our case, generation or age. And we're saying everyone in that category is this way. So most of us, if we've read a generational article or we've sat through generational training that wasn't done very well, have seen the three or four formative events that affected your generation. And therefore, you all think and feel this way. And we can expect you to want and do these things. Like, that is how most generational training, unfortunately, starts. I push back very strongly against that and say, I can't tell you who you are if you tell me the year you're born. But I also believe that the time in which you were born is really interesting and has played a role in a lot of your attitudes and behaviors. Now, the difference to me is I can say that growing up in the time that I did impacted my perspective and my worldview, but that's also interacting with all other layers of my identity. So maybe it's my gender, the fact that I grew up in the United States, in the Midwest, my socioeconomic status, my, you know, anything else, right? That I'm the youngest child in my family, you know, whatever else is relevant to someone's identity and their experience interacts with generation in a way that creates this wonderful complexity. So to generalize into stereotype would to be not making room for that, right? You to say, well, you're a millennial, so I know who you are and what you do. And I'm judging that because all of you are this way, which of course is never accurate and unfortunately gets in the way of us having those more interesting, complex conversations. Whereas generational norms say, well, we can not stereotype people while still acknowledging that the time in which they grew up and the period in their life where they experienced really interesting things like a shift to hybrid work or a global pandemic or a war or whatever it is for people really did have an impact on the way that they see the world and their place in it.
What is the danger of stereotyping in terms of the competitive narrative that you can see all around us, including in the media?
I think the stereotyping, the generational shaming and judging is creating this false narrative that we are in competition, that we are in this battlefield with other generations. And from an organizational standpoint, even if we're talking about society, you know, the much more productive view is what's the opportunity? And if I believe that other generations are on the same side as me, that we're all going up against whatever the generational challenge or whatever the societal problems or you know, big questions of the day are, if we're all on the same side of that rope, pulling against that together, then the fact that you have a different idea of how to do it than me is interesting and could be quite valuable.
What other benefits do you see in fostering this intergenerational teams and age diversity at work, Megan?
A research would show when we have these age-inclusive climates, which means not just older people, but all of us, regardless of age in the workplace, are feeling like our age is not a hindrance, that we're not being penalized for it. We get all of those wonderful things that one would hope. We get more innovation. We're able to adjust to change better, higher engagement, lower turnover. And something I'm very fascinated with is the potential benefits of intergenerational friendships at work and connections and relationships, which are not natural in that we don't tend to naturally interact with people that are significantly older or younger in the workplace. We don't always have the opportunity to do that. But when a workplace facilitates that, or when people take steps to be proactive and make it happen, you know, I've seen these amazing relationships where it's not just mentorship. It's mutual mentorship. It's not learning in one direction. It's bidirectional learning. And even beyond that, one of the greatest things I heard from some pairs that were doing mutual mentoring is they said, we didn't realize how much we had in common. We just assumed we were very different.
I asked you on LinkedIn for your hot tips for working within multi-generational teams and how you get the best out of each other. This is from May.
We are more similar than different. On the surface, differences look big, but they're really just variations of expressing the same values. Across the ages, we all value purpose, connection, and psychological safety. The key to multi-generational teams? Focus on shared values. What changes is how this is expressed. Gen Z looks for employers aligned with their social conscience, so they might vote with their feet if the values don't match. Whereas boomers seek purpose alignment through being more recognised for their contribution. On the outside, it appears Gen Z's job hop, whilst boomers are more loyal. But in reality, both are seeking purpose, just in different ways. So the real opportunity isn't spotlighting differences, it's in understanding the diverse way in which we express the values we share.
Megan, can you comment on May's approach here?
I 100% agree with May, as does research. So, I think the reality is all humans have very similar intrinsic needs. Where we tend to really struggle is that the generational norms we learn on how do you fill that need? What's the right quote unquote way to pursue that need can look very different. And actually, there's a lot of examples, but my favorite one that I think will hit home for many of us is, you know, how many times have you told your child or someone at work has said, you know, these kids today can't get their heads out of their phones. They don't even know how to have a conversation. And, you know, that's one way of looking at the fact that they want to be connected the same way we have a need to be connected.
I'd like to introduce you now to Florence Potter. She's the founding director of No Umbrellas. They run interactive workshops that bridge generational divides in the workplace. Hi, Florence.
Hi, Lisa.
So as a Gen Z yourself, you help organisations learn how to understand their workers from this generation. How do you do that?
So I'm an elder Gen Z. I call myself an elder Gen Z because I use the word slay ironically and still remember rewinding a kind of VCR of The Parent Trap when I was younger.
Nice.
But I found myself very much stuck in kind of the middle of the conversation. I was hearing my friends and colleagues kind of complaining around not feeling like they were seen or understood, and then senior leadership having huge frustrations around how to manage, how to approach, how to support. And then on top of that, you've got that quiet quitting, increased sick days. So really what the workshops are about is all bringing that together, having the conversation, having those challenging discussions. And as Megan said, like the greatest thing about generations is that everyone has an opinion about it. So there really is such great discussions that come out that can be challenging, but also really fun. And I think it's a conversation that needs to be had.
What stereotypes about Gen Z would you like to debunk?
My big one would probably be job hopping. It continually comes up. A lot of discussions with senior leaders of this, you know, huge movement, kind of staying in jobs for 6 months or a year and then changing. But if we actually look at the research and the ABS research in Australia, is that job mobility rate is actually decreased. So there's kind of, to use actually Megan's term, there's a lower frequency of job hopping now than there were 15 years ago. So if we look 15 years ago, that was when millennials were at this kind of early stage career, and they were job hopping at a rate of 15.8%. So that was in 2010. And then if you look prior to that, it was Gen Xers that were kind of entering the workforce, and that was 20.6% of changing jobs. Whereas now we're sitting at a much, much lower, which is 11%. So people saying that they're job hopping more is just, you know, it's just not the case. But I think this is all down to life stage, the job hopping.
Mm.
The second one would be probably lazy, that comes up a lot. A lot of the time, Gen Z are hugely driven by efficiency. They want to get the job done and go home. We've grown up with AI and internet and technology, automation, making things quicker. And yet we're being expected to work the same hours that we were working in the 1960s. So there's a lot of discussions in the workshops, and I actually recently had one around a lot of the under 30s leaving early and then asking the question of, well, have they got their work done? And the manager saying, yep, they did. So what's the issue here?
And Florence, you run workshop for intergenerational collaboration in teams. What does that entail?
It's around bringing people into a room. Our workshops are predominantly all run in person. And it's about having the discussion around how we want to challenge the rooted stereotypes, which are damaging, looking at those norms, very much taking on that Gen Intelligence angle from Megan, and also uncovering and discussing kind of preferences around motivation, feedback, validation, communication, leadership styles. What we've found is that a lot of people don't really know specifically for them how they want to be motivated, managed, feedback given to them, the leadership styles that their preference is. And so it sparks a really good discussion of kind of what those individual preferences are and how can we then share that with leaders and colleagues to actually start a more open discussion of challenging the way that we're working, and instead of having kind of blanket management strategies and blanket ways of working, to kind of adapt that. And every workshop is different and none of the workshops are the same. But the thing with sharing research and sharing ideas is that none of that research has been done on your team. So by bringing a group into a room, we can actually uncover and get really specific and co-create solutions for that team and that organization specifically.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. I'm Lisa Leong, and my guest is Megan Gerhardt, professor at the Pharma School of Business at Miami University and author of Gentelligence. And Florence Potter is the founding director of No Umbrellas. Florence, can you give me one specific example about how you might onboard to take into account intergenerational differences?
In our workshops, we actually kind of share a bunch of ways of people like being led or, you know, do you like picking up the phone? Do you want to have a meeting in person? Having those conversations. When it comes to feedback, would you rather have it in an email? When it comes to motivation, are you motivated by pay? Are you motivated by holiday leave? It kind of sparks a bit more of a meatier discussion, especially kind of in recruitment or on the onboarding side, to show that as an organization, you care about them and what they want and, you know, showing that you value them. And in return, you'll end up getting value from them.
Okay, Megan, can we have some practical interventions here that can help bring intergenerational teams together?
I am in full agreement about the asking better questions. So you want to have smarter intergenerational conversations, let's start with some really powerful questions. I can share just a couple of the ones I've seen work really well. One that I think is really important is one of our practices is about identifying assumptions and adjusting the lens. So certainly something as simple as, can you help me understand? Can you help me understand why you had that reaction to the feedback? Or can you help me understand how you prefer to get feedback? Another question I love is, you know, let's think about a term we're throwing around a lot. So if it's flexibility or transparency or professionalism, how often are we assuming another generation is having the same definition or viewpoint on that? And in fact, it looks entirely different. So professionalism is very much a topic of the moment. Like, you know, young people need to be more professional or work ethic or whatever it is. I love the idea of practically starting your next meeting with, you know, we've been talking a lot about transparency or flexibility. I just want to stop for a second and ask, when I say flexibility, what does that mean to you? And the last strategy I'll give is my favorite sort of Gentelligence power question, which is, you know, if we're all on the same side of our organizational challenges, imagine the power of someone older turning to someone younger on their team and saying, you know, I'm really curious, how would you approach this if it was up to you?
Say I'm leading a team with four or five generations of people. We're about to start a new project. How should I assign roles on the task in a way that brings the team together rather than leaning on assumptions and stereotypes?
I love the idea of focusing on the questions of, you know, given that we all understand the assignment, what role would you like to take on? Where do you see yourself adding value in this project? What energizes you about this? What should we not ask you to do? And the reason I love that is I think it gives an opportunity to break stereotypes. It may very well be that the oldest person on my team is the person that's fascinated by AI and wants to tackle that. And the youngest person, you know, I'm not sure what Florence is seeing, but a lot of the Gen Zs I work with are not necessarily as gung-ho about AI as everyone assumes.
Florence, is there anything different about Australian workplace culture that we should highlight here?
I think in the comparisons between the data that's out there, and Griffith University have actually, they did some great work on intergenerational teams in Australia last year. I think the hustle culture that we see kind of predominantly, I think, in America, and especially in kind of American movies as well, of kind of that grind, is less seen actually in Australia. And I think that living to work isn't really a kind of part of our culture. I think a lot of people, you know, they work to live and they want that balance. Having those boundaries in place are kind of more prominent here in Australia, and especially having that purpose and coming in and wanting to add value and know what the bigger picture is that you're contributing to seems to be driving, especially, a lot of the conversations that I have with teams is that I just want to be involved. I want to be part of it. I want to know what we're working towards. And that's what motivates quite a lot of teams that I've talked to.
We have a regular segment called Try This, where we share tips that can help make your work life better. Florence, what's one thing you'd like this working lifers to try this week that will help multi-generational teams to thrive?
Yes, great. I love this segment of your show. And we spend most of our time with people around our age. So this week, to ask someone outside of your age group for advice, step outside your generational bubble. Maybe you're going decades older or you go decades younger, but ask some advice from someone outside that group. You know, Megan talks about it. I think that mutual mentoring is just huge, and you need to be open to learning at whatever age stage you're at. I don't think we're ever too old to learn, and I think you can get advice from everywhere.
That's a good one. Thanks, Florence. Okay, Megan, your turn.
All right, I'm going to go with making what feels implicit to you when you say something like, how can they not understand that? Or how do they not know that? What do you need to make explicit rather than assuming it's implicit to everyone across generations? So everyone has a different lived experience. There are things that are not second nature or a natural thing to know or understand to different generations for very valid reasons. And so where can you take something that you assume other people are understanding, implicitly should quote unquote know, and just make it explicit? And that ties back to what was mentioned earlier. And here's why. Here's why this is something I think is really important. How can you explicitly explain or give context with that instead of judging people for not knowing what you know?
And is it a specific way to do that? Is it to say, how do I define key terms, or what's something that we can hold on to help us do that this week, Megan?
I think it goes again back to the questions. So whether it's starting your team meeting with, you know, I've been assuming that everyone communicates the same way I do and we have the same preferences. And I obviously favor email, and I'd like to explain why I really think it's a great channel for our team. But I'd also be interested in your point of view, or can you help me understand if you don't agree, why not, right? So I implicitly assume everyone checks their email every 14 seconds like me. And yet when my experience keeps showing me that's not the case, I get sort of grouchy about it. And so where am I need to explicitly explain why I think that's important or why I favor that? And then can I be open to a counter point of view? And then I think maybe the last thing I'll say is, if I say, help me understand your preferred ways of communicating, can I explain mine? There has to then be a third conversation about, all right, given that we now all understand each other a little better, as a team, what are we going to agree upon as our team norm? Not the Gen X norm or the Gen Z norm or the Boomer norm or whatever it is, but what's our team norm and standard given what we're trying to accomplish that we're all willing to get on board and try? So again, becomes less mine versus yours, I think is really the practical way to execute that.
Thanks so much, Megan.
Thank you.
And thank you, Florence.
Thank you.
Megan Gerhart is a professor of the Pharma School of Business, Miami University, and co-author of Gentelligence, The Revolutionary Approach to Leading an Intergenerational Workforce. And Florence Potter is the founding director of No Umbrellas. And you can check out our related story, Could Longevity Workers Save Our Economic Future? It's in the This Working Life story feed on the ABC Listen app. It includes a case study of an organisation whose youngest employee is 21 and oldest is 71, and how they promote intergenerational cooperation. Before you go, book lovers, I want to encourage you to vote now in ABC Radio National's Top 100 Books Countdown. It means working out your favourite 10 books of the 21st century. They could be from any genre: work, self-improvement, books about art or poetry, or even fantasy. So my top pick was The Courage to Be Disliked by Fumitaki Koga and Ichiro Kashimi. It did change my life. Head to the Radio National website or the ABC Listen app to vote now. Thanks for listening to ABC Radio National's This Working Life. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Tim James on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to our podcast and share it with a colleague or a friend. And you can do that on the ABC Listen app or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm Lisa Leong. Until next time, work it, baby.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.